Hello, welcome to The Big Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the big stories in tech, all the things that have gone on this week that are not Apple-based, and there's a keynote next week, so they're all rumour anyway, so who gives a toss? If you've got shares in SpaceX, boom, 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 let me hear you say SpaceX. Well, oh, yeah. There was a great quote this week. If you take kerosene and mix it with liquid oxygen and ignite it, what do you expect? Thank you for that, expert. Joining me to discuss the big stories in tech, starting us off top left, Gary Holtzman. How the devil are you, man?
Hey, how are you? I'm doing good.
I'd say we haven't seen you for a few weeks, but the thing is we haven't been here for a few weeks because we had trips on the shows and all that kind of stuff. So,
you know, I have a theory about that because it's been a few weeks and I was on a few weeks. I think you just, I broke the show and you guys had to fix it. And I apologize for that.
Yeah, no, that's that. Once you've been Holtzmaned, then there's nothing left. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
It's just like in the Ghostbusters movie.
Totally. Have you been well, mate?
Yes, thank you for asking. And you look well.
I'm all right, mate. Actually, yeah, it's been a nice summer. As opposed to being a manic summer, it's been a relaxed summer, but still busy enough to keep the wolf from the door. I like that.
That sounds wonderful.
Excellent, mate. You got a new cupboard behind you?
I'm sorry?
You got a new cupboard behind you?
No.
No, no. Okay.
Same one with the lion and the witch.
Okay, jolly good. Thank you for that reference. Next thing. Jeffrey!
Oh, I wish I had a cupboard with a lion and a witch.
Well, Angela's not that bad. Steady on, mate.
I don't think he said... Did he say lion witch? That was just mean.
Yeah, I don't know what that's going to do to international relations.
You're
going
to be sleeping in the spare room.
Probably.
If she finds out I said that.
Yeah. And other than that, hey, I'm doing great.
Excellent, mate. And it's good to see you're not on the surface of the sun this week, which you have been in the past.
Yeah, well, you know, surface of the sun, kind of hot. Yeah. So
no,
we'll try this.
You've been blown out in the past, so you're not anymore. Next to him, newly wed.
Ian good Grant. Evening.
Mate, so you're what, 3 weeks into your marriage now? 4 weeks?
4 weeks into being married, still happy.
Have you still got the photographs back yet or not?
Oh, yeah, of course I have. You very kindly took some pictures for us, and we have. We've got many pictures.
The photographer's a twat.
The photographer's not a twat. The photographer's a kind and honourable gentleman. Did a really good job.
I got a free Pimm's and lemonade for taking pictures of Ian Grant's wedding. And I'm not a wedding photographer. I am shit, actually, when it comes down to it. But
you are. There's some nice photos there. This one's been very nicely used.
Mate,
around the house on the wall, honestly.
How good was that car?
Oh, the Jag. You got some lovely shots of the Jag as well.
I did.
Well, and the lady with long legs who drove it, yeah.
Well, I fancied the lady more than I fancied the Jag. That's why I took the pictures of her.
Well, you got the nice, you saw her there with her legs dangling out the door, didn't you, when you came in?
So when you were in the church, and I was arriving late because I put the wrong fuel in my car, she was, let's not mention that again, she was dangling her legs out the passenger window, and I wish I'd taken a picture of that because they were a good set of pins.
Oh yeah. Thanks. You could get a cock in a leg at the end though, didn't you? Get a nice sort of, there's a nice shot of away with a car with one leg gently cocked.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was very happy, mate, to get that. So there we go. Next to him, it's Alan Houshall on his porn line. So Snookums, does Pincer Spagel know about the porn line?
No comment.
You shouldn't have dialed in on a different line, mate. You knew you were going to get this. You come in anything other than Digital Amoeba, you know you're going to be getting crap.
Yeah, as they, who knows what they've done to me this time round? We'll get it. We'll work it out.
There's your problem for investing in Microsoft. Skype's bollocks. There we go. But having said that, there's nothing else we can do the show with. And last but by no means least, the man with the malingering wife, Chris Campion.
Evening.
Is she still trying it on, mate?
She's getting there. It's obvious slowly.
Oh, it's like, oh, no, I can't manage.
By the way, she's watching tonight.
No, shit. Sorry, Enzo, I didn't
no, mean she, it. She's not. She won't watch this crap.
Who watches this shit? Nobody. Oh, I just hit the wrong button. There we go. Hang on. Oh, shit. There we go. Right. The week in tech, what's going on? What's big? What's been happening? Apart from SpaceX crashing its... not even crashing. It was a static test, and it went kaboom. And the telecommunications satellite cost $10 billion. But apart from that, and apart from Apple... Everything that's gone on in the week in tech is right here. And starting us off is Camps, because he's going on... it's a Facebook story. Jesus Christ, dude.
So, 2 years ago, Facebook bought WhatsApp and said they were going to run them as totally separate companies, not to overlap.
Is that two years ago?
Yeah, 2014. They bought them for $19 billion, I think it was.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I said it on the article. $19 billion. And now terms and conditions are changing on WhatsApp, and they're going to, unless you opt out, they will integrate your WhatsApp contacts into Facebook, and therefore be able to use and collect that data across the Facebook group of companies. So that's obviously going to hit Instagram. It's going to hit Oculus. Is it? Yeah, all of the scopes are interesting on this in terms of how many people will opt out to try and protect their data and keep it separate. And what this means is it doesn't affect the end-to-end encryption of the of your messages. So anybody who uses WhatsApp, the end-to-end encryption absolutely remains as is. What this is all about is collating the names and the contact numbers of the VR contacts in WhatsApp. Facebook are then going to match them with your Facebook friends and be able to, I suppose, do several things. They're going to be able to make even more suggestions of Facebook friends that maybe you've got in WhatsApp, but you're not Facebook friends with them. But equally, they're going to be able to use it for targeted advertising and probably a whole host of other things. So quite a lot of noise around the internet about this at the moment, and clearly there's going to be some trust related issues, I think, spanning out of this story.
Well, now there's a question, because I'm not on WhatsApp. I am on Facebook, but I haven't got the Facebook app on my phone, and I never check Facebook on my phone. So my question is, my son has got 1 gig of data, and he gets it on the 18th of the month, and by the 23rd of the month, he's got no data left. And okay, some of it is the fact that he's 13 years old and he's probably downloading music, etc., that he's taking a lot of that data. But some of it bothers me that WhatsApp and Facebook are taking some of that data in the background. You know, he's got background apps switching off, but apparently that doesn't make any difference with Facebook. And if two companies are owned by the same firm, the sharing of data is synonymous with that. Surely that's an irrational fear, no? I just don't think that Facebook...
It certainly seems inevitable, doesn't it?
Exactly. I don't think Facebook and WhatsApp are doing anything different than any other application would do if they had a synonymous relationship with it. What bothers me is the fact that they're stealing my son's data in the background on top of.
I think you're right, Ian. I think inevitable, yes. I think the challenge comes up where they did say 2 years ago they will run them as two very separate companies, but obviously 2 years ago all that's been absolutely forgotten now. That's water well and truly passed.
Lie my pants on fire.
Absolutely.
Well, they didn't say how long they would run them as two companies.
Very true.
There is that.
It's like, you know, the store that's open for 24 hours and you go there and the doors are locked and you see the guy who owns the store and you go, I thought you said this place was open 24 hours, and he just looks at you and he says, well, not in a row. It's kind of the same thing.
All right, so the data that joke gets funnier the more you think about it. The data that WhatsApp is going to be sharing with Facebook and all of Facebook's properties, it's some basic information about the user, including their phone number, and then it's going to be analytics. And the purpose for doing all of this is to target you with ads. So the big problem here that I see is that WhatsApp has broken its trust with its users, because WhatsApp has been very adamant for a very long time that they would never have ads in app and that they would never share your data with anyone. And they maintained that, at least the no advertising part, when Facebook bought them. They implied the rest of it, saying that nothing would change. And now here we are in a situation where the information is going to be given to Facebook, regardless of whether or not you opt out. All that opting out does is prevent Facebook from using that information for targeted ads. So if you're using WhatsApp, opting out does not prevent Facebook from having all your data or from the data they're going to share.
But targeted is in inverted commas as well, isn't it? Because actually Facebook's targeting of your ads is about one notch below Amazon's, because Amazon only target you with stuff that you've already bought.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that's
Facebook,
true.
Facebook's targeting is like taking a shotgun and missing the three ring, let alone hitting the ball.
I mean, they're lucky if they do that, to be fair. In terms of Facebook ads, I'm not a user of WhatsApp, so I'm not entirely. But looking through some of the things here, we're talking about, we're going to find new ways of allowing business to communicate with you with WhatsApp. So we are going to start to see more advertising, I think, appearing in it if you use it. It's a case of a decision whether you make a move onto yet another platform.
Ian, you need to stop down in the porn, mate. It's just.
Oh my God, I'm
going to
die.
You've gone all 8-bit again.
Oh God, yeah, I can see the picture now,
A connection. I'm sure you said what was great was good though, but go on, Camps.
Yeah, we've talked about things like this in the past. When I was reading the story earlier, it just made me think it's the whole naivety that's out there from people who use these platforms. So Facebook and WhatsApp, they're all free platforms. We all know that we are the product. It's our data that's been sold, and that's why these companies are worth the money that they're worth. And I just think it just totally screams. I think Jeff's right in that where the data's already there. Facebook already have it. It's just that they're not going to tag it without it, but they'll be using it in other ways. And I think people just need to get wise and face up to the fact that once they put things on the internet, you've talked about this so many times, it's out there, it's being used, and if they're not paying for the platform, then they're essentially selling their soul in terms of whatever they put on that platform. It's going to be sold, and that's how that company's going to make its money.
Yeah, I've had a load of grief from people, and it was interesting going on a podcast a few years ago, and someone said, "Well, how are you a photographer? Because you've got no images online." Yeah, I'm a professional photographer because I've got no images online, because they're mine. And I've had customers in the past say, I've spoken to so-and-so from such-and-such customer, and could you send them some images that you shot for us a few weeks ago? Well, yeah, but as long as they pay for them. Well, they're our images. No, they're not. They're my images. I gave you copies of your images, but they're not yours to sell on or give away. They're still my images. Steady on. And it's a complicated process that people just don't understand. But when you sign up to WhatsApp, when you sign up to Facebook, it's a free service that you are the product and you cannot get away.
Now, when you first signed up for WhatsApp, it was not a free service. You paid for it. It wasn't until after, year,
really?
Earlier this year, that they changed that.
I didn't know
that. And it became free.
So how much were they charging? Because I've always understood WhatsApp to be free, so I've got that wrong.
It was really cheap. It was just a few dollars a year.
Right, okay.
Like it costs more to go to Starbucks and get a drink in a day than it did to pay for WhatsApp.
But it wasn't free.
It was not free. But as soon as they changed it to be free, my assumption was that at some point we would have some legal trickery go down and we'd see a change to their terms of service. And sure enough, here we are.
Right. Okay.
And Deepan's put an article in the chat room, Ewan, from the WhatsApp blog from 2012. Just stating why we don't sell ads, so why WhatsApp doesn't sell ads. And obviously that explains everything back there. I think the key change there is as soon as Facebook bought them in 2014, the whole world changes for WhatsApp at that point.
Yeah.
Right. The upside is that since WhatsApp is a true end-to-end encryption app, that Facebook does not have access to the contents of your chats.
Okay, fair enough. I think it's interesting that you've got the why we don't sell ads to the point that we've now sold out everything that we've got, and we are selling ads effectively, and you are data and you are information that we sell to other parties. I know the wife uses WhatsApp, but I don't at all. So
I use WhatsApp. I use it because I've got a few friends who are on other platforms who are too tight to send messages other than through their free data allowance, and they don't want to send pictures and pay for them, so they use WhatsApp because obviously all that data is transferring free. That to be honest, there's a few friends. If I didn't communicate through and through WhatsApp, I'd hear from them once a blue moon.
You know, the whole messaging app thing is kind of a pain because, like right now, I need to use pretty much on a daily basis Apple's Messages app, WhatsApp, and what's the other one?
Facebook Messenger.
Transfer. What is it? Telegram. So just to have the conversations that I carry on every day, I have to use three different chat apps. That kind of sucks.
So well, I guess I'm gonna be the old man here.
Well, and, there's a surprise. Carrie Holtzman, about to revert to type. Go ahead.
So WhatsApp's been around for a long time. I'm aware of it. I know what it does. I've never used it. I've never had any need to use it. And sometimes I do run into people in society that say, the only way you can reach me is through this or through that. And we just don't, I don't talk to those people. I would pay WhatsApp to not hear from people. If there's a person in my life that I have to go through an extra step, apart from my immediate family, my children, something like that, if I had children that I knew of, I would perhaps consider it. But for ordinary people in regular life, whether it's in business or personal, for them to say, well, the only way you can reach me is through Kik. I'm not installing Kik on my phone.
What the hell is Kik? I've never even K-I-K. Heard of Kik.
Can you install anything on your phone, Karen?
It's another message.
Well, this is the point, right? And then you got Snapchat. I'm not using Snapchat. I believe I'm over the age limit for that. I think
well, you
have to be a teenager.
Actually, no, you have to show your cock on Snapchat, really.
I didn't know.
Yeah, camera.
So you just sold it to me.
Yeah, no, that's like the security image. Like a lot of places, it shows you, like, click on the images of water. All you have to do is upload a picture of your dick, and then you can get on Snapchat.
All right, well, let me just...
No, okay, things to do tomorrow. Yes.
So but, my point is that there's lots and lots of different apps, and there will continue to be more and more. WhatsApp, if you don't like it, you can switch to another platform. I think it's been said very well that when a product is free, the product is you. So if you don't like it, don't use it. It'd be like going to a soup kitchen because you're starving to death and you eat the food and you complain about how terrible the food is or that there's cameras watching you eat. Don't go in there and don't eat it. So I don't understand the right to complain when you haven't paid anything. Now, I do believe paying for something gives you the right to complain. And since I haven't paid for any of this, I'm going to shut up now.
Well, thanks for that last 10 minutes of nothing. Yeah, well done, mate. The thing is, it's quite interesting that for me, if you go back a year, I existed in Twitter and all the friends I had, and I had a lot of people I would call, you know, mates on Twitter. I would talk to them on Twitter, I'd interact with them on Twitter. And if people who were listening to the podcast followed me and they interacted with me, then I would follow them back. Now, Twitter has become a bit cumbersome. There's an awful lot of people that don't hold the political views that I hold, or they talk about politics an awful lot more than I would like, so I don't follow them anymore. And then they remove their follow from me, so we don't have a conversation anymore, when actually all I didn't want, I wanted them to talk to me because I enjoyed their company, but I didn't want the political tweets that they pushed out. And if you look at now, I've interacted in the Slack room with people for a long time. and you're a great example of this, Carrie. If you'd have been on Twitter a year ago, you and I would have talked an awful lot more than we currently have. And if you were in Slack now,
you're welcome.
We would talk a great deal more than we periodically would have done. And you know, the Slack room is my release for conversation with people that I value as my friends. It's not Twitter anymore. So the social aspect of stuff, the WhatsApp of things, is not the WhatsApp of things anymore for me. And I don't think that that's true for an awful lot of people. I think the people who are geeks have migrated away from Facebook, WhatsApp, Twitter, and have gone into places like Slack and said, look, I just want to talk to the people that I want to talk to. I don't want all the shit that goes along with all the bollocks that comes out on Twitter, all the hate that's out there on Twitter. And there is so much negativity on Twitter. I cannot stand it anymore. I would be gone from Twitter if it wasn't for just saying we're broadcasting live now.
I agree. Twitter seems to serve no other purpose but to get celebrities eventually in trouble. One day, sooner or later, you're going to say something you're going to wish you didn't say, and it was completely pointless. And if you hadn't said it, nobody would have ever missed it. It's just an opportunity for disaster, particularly for people in the public eye. And I think it's a very dangerous tool, and a lot of lives have been ruined over it. And it's almost like you can post something really, really wise on Twitter. That doesn't get spread around. That doesn't appear on the news. It doesn't go viral. Yeah. You could have the answer for why we exist on this planet, and everybody could change their whole perspective, and that would never be seen by any, but, you know, handful of people. But then you make a negative, you make a comment that can be taken one of two ways, a negative way or a positive way, and they will jump and grab that negative way, especially if you're, again, in a public eye, and then they will say, you know, this person doesn't like these people. Wait a minute. That's not what I meant. And it just see it over and over and over again with Twitter. So
talk to me about my Brexit comments the other week, mate. Jesus Christ.
Really?
The fallout has been immense.
Well, you know, some attention is good, even if it's bad attention.
We've gone up. I've got more followers than I had when I made the Brexit moron comment, and we've got more listeners than we ever had.
But you didn't lose your job over it. You didn't get publicly shamed in a way that you wanted to go and end your life.
Well, someone left us a one-star review. I was close.
No, you weren't.
No, I wasn't. But why aren't you in our Slack room, Carrie Holzman?
I don't even know what it is. Nobody's invited me.
We have invited you. That's not true.
What are you talking about? No, you swear to God, you've not invited me.
We have. We have. Everyone got invited that was in the BTN... I won't.
Okay.
I'll send you an invite now while we talk. But I think social has, the global social has done its turn. I think it is really struggling at the moment. Because yes, people who don't know what Twitter's about and don't understand the social conversation are signing on constantly to Twitter, and there's 4 billion users, etc. But they don't get it because the original... What you got from Twitter was about interaction with your friends, interaction with people who had commonality with you, not following people who had a blue tick next to the name, which is what it's become. Am I wrong?
Twitter is not the place today that it was 2 years ago. It's changed a lot.
Any other service or website. This is how technology's moves forward, and how it's used changes, yeah. Right? I mean, it's Twitter's not any different than anything else on the internet.
Things like this always evolve. Yeah.
I think that
there's
Twitter being sort of public, you know, you used to have people who would find strangers who would find each other through hashtags, and there would be sort of collective streams of topics running through Twitter and stuff. Now there is just mass noise, and because it is popular, because less techie people have come on, but a lot of those people are using Twitter like Facebook. And no, Facebook is, taking aside Facebook's creeping privacy issues, is a small pond that you choose how many people are in it, and it grows gradually as you increase your friend network. I don't think a lot of the new people who have come into Twitter in the last year really are paying attention to the fact that Twitter is public and you are just shouting into the ocean, and they're all trying to shout louder and louder to be heard over the ocean.
Yes, to a degree, but I think no to a degree as well, in the fact that, Twitter has become something whereby I can post something that I believe and someone will take it and in some circumstances will retweet me out of context. I go back to an Australian idiot who retweeted a comment I made when we were having a long discussion about cyclists in London, and I said that I didn't care about the fact that these people were breaching red light requirements and cycle lane requirements, and they retweeted part of that conversation so it looked like I didn't care about cyclists. And I'm like, how dare you retweet one part of a conversation without the rest of it? That's not okay by me. And Twitter does that. And there is an awful lot of hate speak on Twitter where you say something and someone says, you are quoted or retweeted out of context. And that's not okay. You cannot do that in the real world. You know, there are laws that stop you from doing that. And I got further and further and further away from Twitter to the point now I'll retweet that the shows are going on, and then I'll stay away from it. And this week I've had a conversation with some idiot over Brexit. And it's just like, look, you know, I said Brexit morons, fair enough. I said that. And if you believe everything I say on a podcast, it's just entertainment. Sometimes I say things I don't even believe just for the fact that it's entertainment. It's not meant to be anything other than that. But, you know, he was saying, let's leave Brexit immediately. And I'm like, no, you know, if we're going to go, it's fine. I accept that everyone's voted that we're going to go, but let's not do it horrifically quickly so that we get it entirely wrong and screw the entire process up. And it turned into this huge debate over statistics and data about whether we're better off or not better off with Brexit. And it got away from me, and I was just like, do you know what, I can't be doing with this. And Twitter's got to that stage now where you have a conversation with someone and it turns into who shouts loudest, and it's not okay.
I take a step back from this and I go, Ewan, if that conversation went exactly as you wanted and both of you guys were completely in agreement, would it have made any difference at all in the reality of the situation regarding Brexit? If you guys disagreed, if your friendship was conditioned based on the fact that you agreed, and if you didn't agree, you weren't my friend anymore, was that your friend to begin with? Or if someone said they were a fan and yet they were judging you because you didn't agree with their perspective and they didn't respect yours, is that a real fan? And ultimately, what difference did it make in the world? I suppose we all just want to be heard. Further, I would wish I had your problems, because I post things on Twitter and nobody reads them. So
you don't post anything. Don't tell me you're on Twitter now.
Well, I have people do it for me, but that's beside the point.
You are not on Twitter. Harry Holzman is not a thing.
But it's somebody else pretending to be me.
Oh, no.
Because I don't do it. They're responsible. They do good tweets. They're
funny. Are you in the Slack room yet? Because I sent you an invite.
I haven't received the invite. I have to check
Bullshit.
My email.
Bullshit.
It's not there. I'm telling you, it's not. Hold on. Let me just. Anyway,
I
fudging
sent it.
Now I'm a liar. Okay. See. See.
See. This is just like a social network. It's awesome.
Yeah. No. I think it goes back to the original story about, you know, what is WhatsApp, and if WhatsApp is a thing that takes your data and interacts with you badly and creates a platform for people to say things that you didn't say or interact badly with other people, it's going to die anyway, because that's the problem with social media. And Facebook is dead to me as well, as because of that very fact as well. It's less volatile than Twitter at the moment, so it makes it more appealing than Twitter currently is. And Twitter, I am, if it wasn't for show promotion, I'm done with Twitter. Not happy at all. There we go. Ian Grant has posted a story. He says, it's the end of Nexus. This year, Google's phones are going to forge a new path. Google walking away from something that they've created while it's still in beta. Holy crap, never saw that come in.
What a surprise, isn't it?
What a surprise. Google.
Shock.
What a surprise, eh? Google yet another.
So my wife.
Yeah, oh, and it's a shame, really, because the Nexus handset is something I've personally not had one, but can you hear me? Am I all right?
You're a bit choppy, like you're downloading porn.
Kind of vague sense.
Yeah. It's Kate
honestly, watching. I'm not doing anything. My line speed, I mean, I might even duck out in a bit. My line speed sort of, it's 2 seconds. Happy milliseconds, ping speed.
Oh, bad luck. Carrie Holtzman has joined the Slack
I'm
room.
I'm just tinkering with things. Anyone want to pitch in while I find my internet?
Yeah, Carrie Holtzman has just joined the Slack room. He is now...
Breaking news, everybody. Stop the presses.
He is now T-Boy, effectively.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, where's Anders when you need him?
Yeah, we need Anders to come in and make you T-Boy, mate. Every new person is the T-Boy.
Oh, like the beer assistant.
I am utterly tired of Google starting stuff and never finishing it. My wife has promised that on my headstone, she's going to have Ewan Rankin laid here on the date that I'm laid there, and she's going to have life, the only thing that Ewan Rankin ever finished.
You're assuming that at the point where you die, that's when you're supposed to die, and you weren't supposed to die like 6 weeks after that.
No, Sharon's dad gave me a tap spanner, and Sharon's dad gave me that tap spanner 16 years ago, and I still haven't tightened the tap that I was going to tighten it with. I'm not saying I'm crap.
A lazy boy chair, and I haven't put it together yet. Yeah. So,
and I'm crap.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's the ultimate in lazy for lazy boy.
I am.
Yeah, that's fine.
I am the human Google because I don't finish anything that I start, and Google's the same. I'm so pissed off with Google starting shit and not doing anything with it. Come on, chime in, fellas. You've got to be agreeing.
Well, this is why Google calls everything beta, because if it's beta and they never take it to its fruition, they can say, well, you know, we never even really launched it. It was just beta.
Yeah, exactly. And it's bollocks.
And this is why when Google keep taking over companies, everyone gets worried straight away.
I mean, the interesting one, of course, here is, obviously, I'd say the Nexus phone brand has, pretty good respect from sort of the Android, and even outside Android know, well, if you're going into Android, you know, you should probably consider a Nexus first and then worry about whether or not you do want a Samsung and extra crapware on it. But obviously, if they're going to replace the Nexus brand with Google brand, this is Google wanting to, you know, claim more than just a niche in the Android market set, isn't it, really?
Yes, I think
Nexus,
you're right.
Nexus confuses the non-techie of, well, hang on, that's not a Samsung, that's not an HTC. What brand is that? Is that just a Chinese manufacturer? Whereas, obviously, if you slap Google phone straight on it, that could be a really serious brand competitor too.
Well, yeah,
Samsung and HTC. But
the original Android phone was the Google One, and they never pursued that either, though.
No, but I'm just wondering, you know, that's got to be the play here. That's the only reason you'd get rid of Nexus and slap Google direct on the handsets.
Because of the brand power.
But in that case, haven't they always been worried previously about upsetting, you know, Samsung and some of their other big Android?
They're not worried about that anymore.
But it doesn't appear they are anymore.
I don't think they care. At 400,000 sales per week, I don't think they give a toss either way.
Yeah.
Mr. Sachs is in the chat room. He's got his Nexus 5 and it's still going strong. Works very, very good. Very good handset. Likes the vanilla Android, says Ian. I think it's going, which I think is going too. So, is this just a rebrand, or is this actually a step change? That would
be
my question.
I think it's just a rebrand.
Nothing more.
I think it's both.
Oh, go on, Jeff.
All right. First, they want the rebrand so that they're using the Google name for their own handsets, and then I think that they have some plans to do some of their own hardware design work beyond what they would do with manufacturing partners. So I think Google wants to try and make the Google iPhone, and by that I mean the all-in-one widget where they control the software and the hardware. And so this will be an option that people have, the all-in-one thing to go along with all the other Android options they have.
But having said that, if you're saying that they want the iPhone ecosphere, effectively their app store screws that constantly because it absolutely does.
It's the Wild West and beyond.
Yeah.
So really all they can get out of mimicking the iPhone is creating a hardware that's optimized for whatever version of Android they want to run.
But with no other controls. Ian's gone. It's his story. We're discussing the hell out of it, and Ian's not here to discuss it. Oh, there you go. He's definitely gone. So is Android... Does this make Android less relevant, though?
No. Excuse me. Because Android is so pervasive. And there are so many companies...
Just purely because of market reach.
So many companies are using Android right now. If Google is doing their own thing, it's just another player in the mix, I think.
Right. Anyone else?
Do we think that Google could do anything here where they're using their brand to increase, I suppose, across the platform? So you got Google Chrome, you have the Google phone, and essentially bridging Android across the various things to try and almost... Like we just sort of mentioned, they copy the Apple ecosystem slightly. Absolutely, it hasn't got the controls on it. But to most non-techie users, they don't know that. They just see that they've got Google, this, that, and the other, and actually they're prepared to put the money in Google's hands across a multitude of platforms. So it's just about brand power.
I think it is. Maybe it's also that Google's getting a bit fed up of, for most people, Samsung being the brand that means Android, and this is their chance to take back Android to themselves.
Yeah, I'd see the thing
for a non-techie, does Android mean Samsung?
No, I don't think Android means anything. I think Android means cheap phones.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, Android doesn't mean anything. It's just the phone that they're getting. They're getting a Samsung. They're getting an HTC.
Yep.
They don't know what it's running.
No. And they can't obviously call... Google couldn't call their phones Android because, no, that's just the OS and everyone's running Android. So they need a brand that can compete on the same level as Samsung, HTC, Sony.
They're getting £20 a month. I don't think they even recognise HTC versus Samsung versus Google versus anything else. They're recognising £20 a month, £30 a month.
Inclusive. Oh, I mean, at the higher end, though, there is still people who, do swear by, no, I'm getting a Sony or I'm getting a Samsung.
But you're talking 1% of the market, though, Alan. That's the thing, is the informed purchasing is at 10%. And that's whether it's Android or whether it's Windows, and to a certain degree, whether it's iPhone. But some are buying the iPhone brand based on the name alone, but no one's buying the Android platform based on name alone. I think they're buying it based on the fact that's all they can afford.
I think some people have come up through phones and therefore do have brand loyalty with some of them, like, as I say... Sony, HTC, Samsung. It's a pretty short list.
LG,
yeah. Some people are big LG fans. That's a smaller group. I think it's mainly a brand play, just because Nexus, they didn't want to spend lots of advertising dollars, basically getting Nexus brand into the general public's awareness as opposed to the geek tech's awareness. Instead, they've already got a brand, Google. It's not currently used explicitly on a phone. Easy win, a lot less advertising dollars to potentially, steal some sales, if not away from Samsung, then away from, collectively other makers in the market.
I kind of just pick up on one of the things you said then about the £20 a month. I totally agree. From when you see a lot of people in the going into the phone shops, my parents, beginning of last year, they went into, I think it was a 3-star, and my dad phoned me and said, been offered an iPhone with unlimited this, that and the other, and it's going to cost me, I think he said something like £14 a month. I said, Dad, that's not an iPhone. Can't be, not at that price, it's not an iPhone. He said, no, it is. It does everything yours does. I said, that does not mean it's an iPhone. What does it say? Read it out. And it was a HTC phone. Oh, not particular okay. One at the time. I said, no, walk away. Ultimately, like every one of us around this table now, anybody who's got a problem, we're the ones who get the phone call, can you help me with this? Yeah. And I said to my dad, if you're not getting an iPhone, I'm not supporting you with it. I'm not helping you with it. You can forget it. Partly because I don't know Android at all.
I may be the fruit of your loins, but bollocks.
Say again.
I may be the fruit of your loins, but bollocks.
Yeah, I'm not helping you with it. Partly because I can't, and partly because I have no interest in touching one. But it's people are going in, they're seeing a smartphone, they know iPhone, and they're buying them, and as far as they're concerned, they've got a touchscreen phone that they can do stuff on. And it's cheap.
Just a real quick story. My mother-in-law got a smartphone. What she doesn't know about, you know, what does she know? She's an old lady, and she's a digital immigrant. She wasn't born with it. And it slipped out of her pocket not 2 months into owning it and into the toilet. And she pulled it out, and it won't work. And she lives 45 minutes away, so I told her to take the battery out of it. I can't figure out how the battery comes out. Great. So, put it in some rice. She puts it in rice. And the screen works, the computer part of it works, but it won't make or receive phone calls. So the phone part doesn't work. So I have her bring it over.
So she has a big iPod Touch now.
So, well, I she brings it over, and I think, you know, I'm a smart guy. I'll figure this out. It's probably no big deal. It is glued shut. It's a Motorola Moto E. You cannot access the battery. If you go to a YouTube video to see how it disassembles, it requires a heat gun to melt the glue to get the case separated. And I said, This is like designing a car with welded on tires. What engineer would think you would never ever have to pull the battery or replace the battery? And there was no way to cold boot this phone. You could, I guess, leave it on until the battery drained entirely, but it would take forever. And I just thought, well, you know, you got what you paid for. And it was just a real shame that the companies that make these smartphones that are competing with one another, and, you know, especially a respectable company like Motorola used to be, would in this day and age intentionally design a phone that cannot be serviced. And, you know, like you said, we're the ones who get the phone call from the family. So if the family members don't buy the phone we're familiar with, it's going to cost everybody a lot more time at the very least.
No. I think if it's just a rebrand and the fact that the system is still there and still functioning, then fair enough. You know, you rebrand your product to make more sense to the consumer, that's all right. But if this is a change in the functionality of the app itself and they're walking away from something to get to something else, that's shit, Google. Definitely. Alan, you said Plex DVR is all for cord cutting. Tell us more.
Yeah, so... this is something that, I mean, I've been following and looking for a replacement for Windows Media Center, which for quite a while now, because my home since 2005.
I thought you were going to say that Media Center's been a bag of shit for quite a while now.
No, it's been doing that good would be service fair. For me since 2005.
Oh, come on.
And, you know, it was giving me multi-room live and recorded TV with multi-room play and pause and all that, with Xbox extenders and stuff since 2005. Obviously, Microsoft killed off Media Center, and it doesn't exist in Windows 10 unless you're willing to hack at it and hope Microsoft doesn't break it the next week with unofficial hacks. So I've been looking around for solutions to get multi-room network TV back. And the sort of leader in terms of actual taking aerial feed in has been for quite a while HD Home Run, who have network tuners that, you know, you literally plug it in the wall, plug in the aerial, plug in a network cable, and it turns it into a it gives you a streaming service for live TV, and that works in the US and the UK most places in the world. They've even got some that are cable card supported if you're in US and cable related. But they didn't really have... it was then seeing, well, you either cobble together Kodi, you know, XBMC, or one of these other things to do your recording and stuff like that. But then there wasn't any way that was really working with me to get the TV out from my central PC to the various TVs in my house, most of which at the moment have an Xbox attached to them. That was my ideal device I'd like to use to actually redisplay the TV, because only one of my three TVs actually has an aerial socket anywhere near it. So I want to do network TV. HD Home Run did a Kickstarter a while ago for a networked digital video recorder, which obviously DVRs are becoming a bit more redundant. Now we've got so much TV on demand, but live TV was the bit I was more interested in. But then today, Plex, who I already more recently migrated across to as a superb movies, music, photos and videos within your own household. And you can, you know, it streams outside your household to your own devices. And they've got apps on everything. They've just launched a live TV and DVR service, which gets its source signals from any of the available HD home runs. So it looks like I might finally be able to move my main tower PC off Windows 8.
there's a lot of me listening to you talk about all of that for a long period of time that's making me think that's just a great case for going towards Apple.
Really?
Yeah, because the Apple TV, and okay, you might have to convert your WMV files, but actually, you know, if you've got an Apple Mac Mini with server on it, or even if you haven't, and you just run iTunes, providing your stuff's in M4V or MP4, it does exactly what you've just said.
Do live TV to multiple TVs, play and pause, and record live TV.
No, clearly Windows Media Center doesn't either.
Well, it does. Media Center does all that. It's end of life.
But
it
Plex
doesn't exist past Windows 8.
But everything you've described from Plex there runs on Apple TV 4.
Yes. So, I mean, I already had Plex for the other stuff. Plex has now added the live TV and the video live TV video recording that previously I don't think was available from pretty much anything else. And certainly not with the extender capability to run from a central location but extend out to multiple cheap things plugged into multiple TVs.
Multiple cheap things. There's the title of the show. Deep Pan says, doesn't Elgato do that over air TV?
I believe Elgato is another option, but I don't think they've got the wide range of sort of end extender options that I was looking for. And in terms of extenders, I already had Xbox 360s and now some Xbox Ones. So those were my ideal, you know, set-top boxes for the TV end. Actually, HD Home Run have just actually released an app on Xbox One, so you can watch their live TV now. But having everything back inside in Plex is actually the first and proper closest to the all-in-one live TV, recorded TV, music, photos, videos, and more in one interface. That's the one that's going to manage to get me the wife acceptance factor to move away from Media Center.
Okay, that's important. I'm not diminishing
that. It's got to be, you know, nice, simple.
Wife acceptance factor trumps all.
Yeah, no, but I mean, is there a better solution than what Alan's described there?
Well, I mean, we're trying to solve two different problems. I'm trying to, I have cut cable for TV, and I bought the Amazon Fire TV, the expensive one, the $100 one. And, you know, you can load VLC on it to load your local media, which will play your Apple files, your MOV files, your Windows files, your WMV files, of course, your MKVs, your MP4s, audio files. Of course, you need to put one on each TV, though, and you're not going to plug live TV into it, but you can subscribe to services like Sling, which I've ultimately been disappointed with. And to be honest, I've been disappointed with live TV, at least what I can get with an aerial, because we'll take the Olympics, for example. My wife's a huge tennis fan. We saw no tennis broadcasted throughout the Olympics. We saw lots of swimming and lots of gymnastics and discus throwing. Where was the tennis? So it'd be nice if there was some other way of being able to select, just like with NFL football here in America, there could be 13 games going on at the same time. The one that's being aired on your live local channel may not be the one you want to watch. So you have to go to some NFL package through some service like DirecTV. And now they're talking about an app you can download. And if I can do that and throw that on the Fire TV, then that would be great. And furthermore, I hear you can hack the Fire TV and turn it into like a Plex server, and there's a Plex app. So I think there's a lot of potential with that without all the complication of Plex, but I could be completely wrong.
I think the main one is obviously in the UK, we've got some really good live TV channels. I mean, Anisent, you know, which you could get to through some apps like the BBC iPlayer app would give us the morning watching, you know, the live news, BBC News. But then there's not really great ways unless you're cobbling together and trying to use a mobile website or, you know, a website on a TV to get things like, you know, the Food Channel, Quest, and other things that are just on Freeview and are actually, you know, decent channels free to air in the UK, whereas obviously, yeah, I know US, do you really have the quality of free to air TV channels that we do in the UK with things like BBC and stuff?
Well, we have picture quality, we just don't have content quality, but that's nothing that's going to change. But I started to add up what the Amazon Fire TV is costing me. Netflix is $10 a month. Sling, I think, was $25 for the package, and now I'm at $35. I'm thinking maybe it was cheaper for me to just stay with cable. You know, it's starting to add up because I still don't have as much
place to go to find all the stuff.
Let me in, Grant, for the door, my kitten. Say again, Carrie, and then Jeff, pick up.
I think I was heard, right? Wasn't I? I think no, Jeff wasn't heard.
But just say it again, because we had Ian dialing in.
What I'm saying is that I'm paying like $25 a month for Sling to get channels that I want that I'm not getting by default over the air. They're not offered things like Comedy Central or the Sci-Fi Channel or HGTV that my wife likes. And then, of course, there's Netflix. That's another $10 a month. And then the box itself, the Amazon Fire box, was $100. And I'm still not getting everything I had with cable. As much as I despise cable, I'm starting to think that maybe it was a pretty good deal after all. Although the picture quality is better through the Fire TV than it is through cable. But if I switch to maybe DirecTV at $50 a month, I'm starting to think I get more channels with the DVR and the remote control. And, you know, the thing with the Amazon Fire, of course, is you can push the little microphone thing and talk to Alexa, which I'm still puzzled what I'm supposed to tell Alexa to do. But ultimately, it becomes, I'm wondering if I'm really saving any money. I am spending less, and I am now getting less compared to cable.
Come on, Jeff, you were saying?
Yeah, you've also given up convenience because instead of having just the one Nexus sort of thing that your cable or dish provider gives you, now you have to deal with different devices, different apps, and paying for all these different services to get the content. It's cord cutting is hard, and I did it, but I'm actually pretty easy to accommodate when it comes to my television entertainment. I've been able to get by with my $10 Netflix subscription, and I already have my Amazon Prime subscription, and then for the other shows that I am really interested in, it's actually cheaper for me to buy the season on iTunes. And so I'm still ahead of the game by a long shot, but now I have the complexity or relative complexity of some of my content is coming through Apple TV and some of it comes through my Amazon Fire Stick.
Yeah, and this is one of the ones where I think Plex is a real winner and people should have a look at it in terms of its the most expensive way to have it with the Plex Pass for the new TV things. Basically, the new features are always require a Plex Pass subscription from them. But the most expensive way to get that is $5 a month or, you know, $40 a year. And this gets me one app which will have every sort of my content in, and it's one interface, one app. The apps are also on everything, but yeah, I'm not bouncing around between multiple apps inside, you know, pretty much ever any other service. And I think that is the biggest pain cord cutters go through, isn't it? Hang on, I want to watch this. Right, now which app is it in? Mm-hmm. And then where do I go once I'm in the app?
Yeah, but am I the only person sitting there thinking it's just too damn hard to get what I already own onto my television? And that's the key part, isn't it? It's here's what I've got. This is mine. I purchased this. I purchased a license to watch it on the devices that I want to watch it, but I have to jump through too many friggin' hoops, whereas actually there is a simplistic route in certain platforms that will get me there. And you know, anything that's outside that ecosphere of Apple is difficult to get what you already own to watch. And, you know, that promotes piracy.
That's what I was going. It's easier to just download the show you want to watch. Perfect quality. Commercials are already cut. Stream it through your media streamer to your local TV, and you are rewarded for that without any of the hassles that the honest people have to go through.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, I buy nearly everything that I own through Apple, and it's there. It's stored. It's backed up. I can download it. It's a physical file that, provided I put in my password, I can watch on any computer. And there's an element to that that's just like, I don't see the point in going through all the extra shit that you got to go through. I couldn't give a stuff about Plex.
I agree with you there, Ian.
Plex isn't the sort of thing that's going to really take off until it becomes something that my parents can use.
Exactly.
And right now, Plex is something that I can set up and I can use if I wanted, but it's a pain in the ass. So I'm not going to do it. I've done it, so I can say it is a pain in the ass for me. And I certainly wouldn't set it up for my parents, because when it doesn't work right, then I'm the person they're going to call, and there's enough complexity in the system and in the interface that they are going to just not get it. So that's my litmus test for services like Plex. It's awesome for the people that that totally get it, and for everyone else, it's just not
pain
there.
In the arse. Yeah,
completely agree. I have to say, I'm back now. Good evening, gentlemen. Again, from my point of view, I had various boxes and things sat in front of our telly. I've been worn down by the rest of the household, and we've now, literally just this evening, I've just wired up and sat in a brand new Samsung 4K telly with smart apps galore sticking out of the back end of it. And now we can watch. We've already got Amazon, we've got Netflix, and we've got the Amazon subscriptions. Those are both enough for us, plus the iPlayers there. That's about all we really need. Everyone's happy. There's one thing. They go and press a button on a remote control. They press home. They pick the app that says iPlayer. They can watch Blue Peter or whatever it is they want to watch. Everyone's happy. I haven't got to go, oh, you've got to go onto this box, then open that app, and then run that, and then it'll work. No one's interested. That it is too complicated. Mm. I mean, I must admit, I'm from sort of a side thing is, I think Sky are bending me over far too much now. I ditched Sky years ago, and I won't go back. But otherwise,
I've got Sky, but I have to say that being a Netflix subscriber, the kids love Netflix. They love their Horrible Histories. Bryony loves the My Little Pony videos. They like their YouTube and that kind of stuff. So having an Apple TV in every room actually works far better for me. And there is zero tech support on that. And I don't pay anything extra for the process, and it does just work. The Apple TV is one of those products from Apple that I actually think really does just work. You know, I'm happily walking away from the watch this autumn because I think it's a shit product, but the TV is doing all right for me. Thank you very much. Chris, you were agreeing with me.
Yeah, just to sort of pick up on that point there, the Apple TV, I've got them in the room, and it's really me and my wife that watch TV in our house. Everything my daughter consumes is now an iPad. Yeah, we can have cartoons on in the room, and she's really not interested at all. But she loves YouTube, she loves Disney Life, she loves Netflix and Amazon Prime. She knows where all the cartoons are, and she'll gladly just sit there and watch all of those things. Whereas between me and my wife, it's Sky, it's Netflix, and it's Amazon.
Comments from the chat room. We had lots of tennis, said Bob Beach. Apple TV for the win, says Deep Pan. Bob Beach says, Plex, no thanks, can't bother with it. I agree, Apple TV is just great, it works. And Swarmer said, I find plenty to watch over the air. And he ditched his cable TV a little over 6 years ago. So I don't know who's disappeared there. Camps. Yeah, Camps, are you thinking your freezing screen's going to be fixed? And it's not. Because you weren't,
it just dropped.
You clearly weren't watching the Mac Show, mate, because we couldn't get Steve Sandy off his O-face at all. Dropbox hacks leads to leaking of 68 million user passwords. Now all of us got a password. Oh, if you haven't changed your password since 2012, then you need to change it now because... And they said it was just we just think you should, rather than, oh dear, we fudged up.
I've got a couple of customers. Well,
this is your
customers
story,
have right? asked, is Dropbox safe? Can I put my files on there? And I say, well, yes, it's safe, but the minute you put your files out there, they're out there in some form or another, whether encrypted, and of course, how that's going to determine how tough that encryption is based on the password you select. And if you don't take your password seriously, then you're not taking your data security seriously. And so, how important is it really to you when you ask me this question? Are you sincere? Because a lot of people say, is that Dropbox safe? And what's your password you normally use? Password? Yeah, it's safe for you. So basically, here it is. It seems like every website at some point or another gets hacked. And it doesn't matter how secure they claim to be. It doesn't matter if it's PayPal. It doesn't matter if it's a fast food restaurant. If it's a computer involved, it's getting hacked, and it's just a matter of time. And I find this just absolutely fascinating that a service as big as Dropbox, and my understanding is what happened here is Dropbox is saying that the hack happened through some of their forum software, which they got through a third party, and they're no longer using that software. What they're not telling you is the version of the software from the third party was not kept updated by Dropbox. Nice how they left that little piece out, right? It's just an interesting sort of, I kind of feel like I live every day the same. These sites, I thought Dropbox, considering the type of data that they handle, this would never have happened. But if it can happen to them, I have no faith in any other service offered on the internet.
I'm going to jump in here and say, I don't think Dropbox give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
See, I had the pro account with Dropbox, and I kept a terabyte of space where I used to upload stuff, and I had folders, and I had tons of stuff, and it came up for renewal, and I was like, well, actually, you're a bit expensive, and actually, what you're giving me isn't as good as what I can get from the iCloud stuff, so I'm just going to go to iCloud for me 1 terabyte of storage, and it's $6.99 as opposed to you, which is $100 a year, and... So I'm going to leave. And I sent them an email saying, I'm going to leave. And they wrote an email back that was like, okay, fine, you need to get your stuff out by so-and-so, otherwise we're going to delete it. And it wasn't like, oh, no, stay with us. It wasn't, I'm bothered to keep your business. It was like, okay, fine, piss off.
Yeah, don't let the door hit you in the ass.
Completely.
And that is exactly, completely. That is Dropbox's demeanor, and I don't think they give a shit anymore. I really don't.
You might be right. I mean, that would make sense, Ewan. That would make sense.
Yeah.
If the reason they got hacked And the reason they didn't keep their forum up to date wasn't because they were incompetent, and it wasn't because they were greedy. It was simply because they didn't care.
They don't care. I think
that's an answer I find acceptable.
Yeah, I think they just are at a situation whereby other people are doing it better than them. They can't make any money ever anymore, so they're thinking, you know what, bollocks. And they didn't give a shit that I was willing to take my $99 elsewhere.
Well, you weren't upgrading to a business plan. So
I'm an arse.
Yeah, so there wasn't any real value in you as a customer. I mean, I get emails all the time from Dropbox about how I should upgrade to a business plan. And if I go to the Dropbox website to look at something as opposed to using the app through the Finder, whatever, I get the same thing. You need to upgrade to a business plan. This is going to be so great for you. And I have no need for a business plan.
Yeah, I think so, I'd be just happier buying a NAS or plugging a USB drive into the back of my router and just creating my own cloud.
There's a service you can get in it. Well, not a service. It's a bit of software. If you're in a Linux box, you can set own cloud up. When you've got an IP, you can get back into your home, set up a dynamic DNS or a static IP, and you can set your own up. I had a little play with it. It looks like quite a good product.
And if you get hacked, it's your own fault. I can accept
exactly.
But when I put my faith into a company, and that company, if Ewan's correct, if that company doesn't care, or if that company has other priorities, that my data security is not as high up on their list as it is on mine, and I have no control, and then I suffer the consequences, I would rather have the control and suffer the consequences. It's an easier pill for me to swallow.
Mm.
Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
No, so, if I don't, there's router updates, for example, if I'm using my router as my FTP server or my cloud storage, and I fail to update my router, and as a result of that, I get hacked, that's my fault. So I have no one to blame but myself. But when I pay a company, I expect a certain level of security. I expect a certain minimal level that make things impossible to occur. And these companies will tell you everything that you want to hear to get you to fork over that money. And then the reality is, it seems like with every one of these companies at some point, whether it's Carbonite, Mozy, Dropbox, any sort of data storage facility, I haven't heard about anything regarding Amazon S3 yet, but if it has happened, I wouldn't be surprised. If it hasn't happened, I bet it will. That's the part that I find unacceptable. I feel like it's, you're paying for something you're not getting.
Yeah, I mean,
which is security.
Alan's put a thing in here about, he's on mute, so he's not going to be able to be heard.
In terms of the inevitability of companies getting hacked, I would just recommend that people do register free at haveibeenpwned.com. It is a respectable site with a security researcher who basically trawls through and finds what exact accounts have been leaked and what pace have been released onto the dark net. And basically you can put your email address or a username into the site and it will tell you where and how there's been leaks for your particular email or username. And you can subscribe for free and it will send you alerts. So yesterday I got a new alert saying my email address has been leaked from a Dropbox breach. So I got that at 22:47 yesterday.
And changed his password from password to password _ !!
1234.
Well done.
Yeah.
Who's got the next story? Who's not done a story yet?
Oh, I haven't done a story yet.
Jeffrey, what's your story, bud?
Here we go. All right, so every now and then I like to take us to the sky with my stories. And, there was the news that came out a few days ago that there was the mystery space signal and maybe it was alien life. Well, it turns out, no, it wasn't. And this is no surprise. The real shocker would have been if this had been an alien signal. Turns out it was a terrestrial signal and I think it came from Russia, but anyhow, it doesn't matter.
So it's Russians again.
But what I like about this is that people were getting really excited about the possibility that there might be life beyond Earth. And this incident came just shortly after we had the news that there is an Earth-like planet orbiting, is it Proxima Centauri?
Yeah, our nearest planet. It's only 4 light years, yeah.
4 light years away. So it's a star that's close enough that mm-hmm. we could conceivably go there in the relatively near future in Earth lifespan terms. And so now I'm wondering, are we at a point where people are getting more excited or intrigued or at least more open to the possibility of life beyond Earth? So I know there's a lot of people that historically have felt that it's just simply not possible. And I think it's more likely that it's just not reachable because the distances between stars are so great.
Do you know about Jocelyn Burrell?
The name sounds familiar.
Okay, so Jocelyn Burrell was the lady who discovered pulsars, and she did all the mathematics to work out that pulsars potentially existed. And then when she actually discovered them, because they found them and they had this repeating signature, they called them LGMs, little green men. And they were saying that they were actually potentially SETIs, extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. And she was really pissed off because she wasn't going to get her doctorate because she'd put all her money on it being pulsars. And the rest of the scientific community decided that it was going to be extraterrestrials, and it wasn't. It was actually pulsars. She was right. So.
Of course she was right.
Yeah. So, and the if you listen to anyone that talks about it at the moment, they're all saying if this was possible on another planet in a reachable distance, we would have seen it repeat on Earth, and it hasn't repeated on Earth in over 2 billion years. Mitochondrial DNA has not had a replication of production on this planet in 2 billion years. It's not happened.
Yeah, you know, it's the universe is a really big place, really big place. So for me to assume that there is not life anywhere else in any form, that doesn't work for me. There's just far too many possibilities for something to be out there, even if it's just my microbial.
I think there's microbial life on Titan and that kind of stuff, and Europa.
Oh, sure. I would be shocked if we didn't find microbial life on moons in our own solar system.
But I don't believe it's taken the leap to being intelligent to produce radio signals.
Right, yeah. Expecting microbes to make radios is quite a stretch. So, but nonetheless, the fact that people are kind of excited about this now, again, and we have an Earth-like planet that is 4.5 light years away, that's kind of intriguing. And my guess, though, is that people, if we ever get to see this planet, will be very disappointed in what Earth-like means, because Earth-like doesn't necessarily mean a planet where you have rolling green hills and blue oceans and bright flowers everywhere. It could be a very harsh environment, but would still qualify as Earth-like.
Yeah, no, I think if we found somewhere that's Earth-like within 4 light years, then you've only got to work out that means that you're going to get a signal back from this place every 4 years. So if forget everything else about, well, there might be intelligent life on something that's 50 light years away. Yeah, but if we send it to the 4 light year one, at least we've got a chance of finding out pretty soon enough if it's a dead planet or not.
Sure. I mean, if we could send a probe to this planet.
Hang on, because you're talking about 30 plus years, what is it, 40 years of Voyager sailing out, mm-hmm. and it's only just got past Pluto. So, you know, you're talking
we
about...
We need a little more technology before we can do it.
Years. It's not going to happen. Your best technology is a radio signal, no question. But the other problem you've got as well is don't forget that what you see, and this, I've blown Ellis's mind with this. If you look at Jupiter, he's saying, wow, that's great. That's what Jupiter looks right now. I'm like, well, actually, no, that's what Jupiter looked like an hour ago. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, so the light takes 8 minutes to come to Earth. To go to Jupiter and come back to Earth is probably nearer an hour, 40 minutes to an hour. So actually, you're looking at where Jupiter was 40 minutes to an hour ago, not where it is right now. And if you're talking about sending a signal to a planet which is 4 light years away, you're sending an image, or you're sending a signal to somewhere where it was 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of people don't get their head around. It's really, really tough. Even if you know where you're going to send it to, it's incredibly hard to get it to actually be at that point.
Oh, yeah. It's the math is crazy. I mean, it's hard enough to send an unmanned probe to a moon somewhere else in our solar system. Can you imagine in aiming to send a probe to a planet orbiting another star? Assuming we
have the
technology to get there in a reasonable amount of time.
Deep Pan is quoting Arthur C. Clarke. He says two possibilities are there. Either we are alone in the universe or we aren't. Both are equally terrifying. And Bob Beach says, let's invent the warp engine.
Well,
you know that's a program, right? It's not real. Okay, Bob.
So what's that engine that it's like a microwave engine that people are saying no one can figure out how it works, but it does?
Yeah, no, they said it's like theoretically it's not possible, but actually someone's proved that it is possible. You actually fire a microwave to a focus point and it creates thrust.
Right, which sounds crazy and it doesn't make sense, but there you go. So with technology like that scaled up, well, really what we're looking at there is something that makes it more feasible for us to expand through our own solar system as opposed to go to other stars.
It beats the old kerosene and liquid oxygen that blew up on the pad today at SpaceX as well.
Yeah, now Facebook doesn't get to put their communication satellite in orbit.
NASA's EM drive test shows that warp drive engine works. Does it break Isaac Newton's laws of physics? Well, Isaac Newton's laws of physics were broken by Einstein anyway, so yes, probably. Probably. NASA has built a warp drive. Yes. Not quite, but okay. Thank you, Deep Pan. Thank you, Carrie. Who's not done a story yet? What is that?
I think I was the last.
This podcast and all these reports by UK2. Thank you for supporting them because they support us. We're with them for the next 7 years, if I'm still alive podcasting. And they've been absolutely wonderful. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and you get all the offer codes and you can get 20% off your basket. And all the offer codes work even when the special offer's on UK2, which is incredible. Unbelievable even. And also, please check out Hoya. Do you notice the new glasses I'm wearing, chaps? They've got black sides.
You're looking pretty sharp.
To the silver
looking
sides.
Hot.
These are the new Avantex. Mark.
Very swish. They're very swish.
They're beautiful. Mark came down yesterday and fitted me for a new pair. I also had the prescription redone because I wasn't convinced about the previous prescription. I went to see Mark's wife, who gave me a proper eye test because she's an optician as well. And I got completely the wrong prescription, which is for the last set of glasses. So I now have a set of Hoya glasses with the right prescription in them. And the last one were pretty good, and so these are incredible. Hoya gave us one of the Mac Minis for the Mac Mini wall. Thank you very much. Peach, thank you very much for giving us a $20 subscription to or a donation towards the Mac wall. If you want to donate to the Mac Skype wall, you still can. It's bageltechnews@gmail.com is the Patreon. And you can also contribute to us via Patreon at patreon.com/BritishTechNetwork as well as. Thank you very much to Hoya and thanks to BTN and thanks to UK2 as well. If you get a chance, please tweet out thanks to Hoya_UK for supporting us and thanks to UK2 as well. And do what Chris has done this week. He's walked into two opticians and gone, excuse me, do you stock Hoya lenses? And when they said no, he went, oh, that's a shame, and walked out.
One of the opticians that I walked into was a fairly high-end optician, right. and there were two girls behind the counter, and they looked at each other, then they looked at me, then they looked at each other again and went, I ain't got a clue. Oh, thanks. It's a shame. Bye. Let's try it out.
And you passed on the details to Mark at Hoyer, haven't you? So
yep.
You can go in and hi, I'm from Hoyer. There you go. You see, that's the way it works. Brilliant. Great marketing ploy. Absolutely fantastic marketing. Bob Beach has done the calculation. 4 light years equals 2.3151 times 10 to the power of 13 miles. Yeah, I'll be dead.
So pack a lunch.
Yeah. It's a thermos. Thank you very much to everyone who supports us and looks after us, whether that's UK2, whether it's Hoyer, or whether it's just you sending us some Patreon donations and that kind of stuff. We do appreciate it. It's very much greatly received. Cool things. Mr. Holtzman starts off.
Oh, I'm going to start us off with something that I think we might have talked about in the past, but this was just on sale the other day, and gosh darn it, it was half price, and it's not half price today, but I ordered two of them. I got to have one for each car. It is the flux capacitor USB charger that you plug into the cigarette lighter in your phone.
It's a bit small.
They don't call them cigarette lighters anymore, do they? So you plug into the 12-volt accessory outlet in your car, and now you don't have to fight over whose phone gets charged between you and the wife or the kids. It's got a couple of USB ports on there, so it can do a couple at the same time, two, actually,
awesome.
Simultaneously. And at the same time, if you drive 88 miles an hour, you can go back in time or into the future.
Does it only flash?
That last part may not be true.
Does it flash if you're doing 88 miles per hour?
I think it just always flashes.
Oh, okay, right. So it's a cheap flashing light for $25.
In the shape of a flux. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, mate. That realization just hit you.
It's still cool.
How easily is Carrie Holtzman separated from $25?
Hey, I got two of them for that price.
The answer is thinkgeek.com/flux capacity USB charger.
Though, it is one of them is a 2.1 amp and the other one is a 1 amp charging socket. So, at least he will get super fast charge on one of his phones and a decent charge on the other.
I've got to say,
it'll just look cool.
Given the choice, I'd buy the Knight Rider kit, USB charger kit.
That one looks pretty cool.
Yes, thank you. $29. It's worth the extra $5 by a long way.
Yeah, to have a full
matter of fact, I like that one
car.
So much.
Cool. Oh, Jeffrey's already $30 out of pocket.
Not yet, but I'm seriously
thinking about it. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
It's on the side of your
page. It's people who bought this also bought this.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
See, my problem is
have you seen the Star Trek light switch as well?
Outlet thing is in my car. I don't think it'll fit.
Have you seen the Star Trek light switch?
Yeah.
Star Trek electronic door chime and light switch.
There's also a BB-8 one there, Jeff.
Oh, this is probably a bad mistake to bring this site up to you guys.
Click ThinkGeek, man. ThinkGeek is $100 plus. Every time.
Oh, and it adds the door swoosh sound as you walk past.
I have a friend that put one of the Star Trek light switch things in their bathroom. And so you walk in the bathroom and the doors go swish, swish. It's awesome.
Excellent. Good pick. Well done, Carrie. You cost me a fortune this evening already. Bastard.
And I can sleep well tonight.
Yeah, sure, cool. Jeffrey, what have you got for us?
What I have for you is a YouTube channel. And this YouTube channel is where you can go and find the collection of all of the Billy West audio clips where he is saying Donald Trump quotes as Zap Brannigan. Zap Brannigan being the very boisterous space commander from Futurama. And hearing actual Trump quotes done in Zap Brannigan's voice is amazing and awesome and really scary at the same time, because you can't tell, is this something that Zap said, or is it something that Trump said? But it's awesome.
Fair enough.
And it's free.
It's free. We like YouTube videos that are free. Well done. Good pick. Ian, what have you got for us, mate?
My cool thing is you.
Me?
Thank
Why?
You. Yes, you're my cool thing this week because you came and took fantastic photos of my wedding. I'm just going to publicly thank you because I've got the best opportunity to do it where people can hear. You were ranked as a top man and an excellent and a scholar. And I have to thank him from the bottom of my heart for some wonderful photos you took at my wedding.
I'm not a wedding photographer by any
You're chance. Not a wedding photographer, but you made a bloody good job, sir.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you very much, mate. But
and as a side thing, when you've got an internet connection as shite as mine, another thing you can get, FlashGet. That's a blast from 1988 for anyone who remembers it. That actually got the two gig file you sent me to get downloaded without it crashing partway through.
Yeah, no, I've got a new server that was created by Anders, the guy that just won. He's the reason we're live streaming tonight, because otherwise we wouldn't be working. Anders got everything running, but he created me this little server that uploads stuff, gives a random code to it, and allows me to send. And the thing that's nice about it is you can only download the code that you've got. So if I give you the folder, you can get everything that's in the folder. But if I only give you one of the files, you can't go back and get the stuff that's in the folder. It's beautiful. And I sent that via the same system to Ian. So there you go.
Good. Thank you again, sir.
I'm a good pick then, mate. Well done.
Yeah, you were a good pick. Definitely.
I'm no wedding photographer. If you want me for your wedding, move on. Find someone else. I hate weddings. I've got. I went to.
Would you do a divorce?
No. So while I was at Ian's wedding, I'm sat on the table, and the guy that sat next to me, they're all talking. So, are you a wedding photographer? No. I did commercial photography only. Right, you don't do weddings? Not if I can help it. No, I said. I've got two standard questions. If friends say, "Oh, you know, it's friends of friends," would you mind shooting the wedding? Is the bride arriving in a car or on a unicorn? Because if it's on a unicorn, then I'm not interested because I'm never going to keep her happy. And you've really got to question whether the bloke should marry her in the first place. And the guy that was to the left of me at your wedding, Ian, said, "Where the hell were you 2 years ago?"
What did he look like? Big chap or a smaller one?
We didn't get. Little guy. His dad's an arms dealer and he's got a beard.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
And he's just Howard.
Howard. He's just got divorced, apparently.
Yes,
like,
he has.
And when I said it, he was just like, "Where the hell were you 2 years ago?"
You met a nice lady as a consequence of our wedding, we've discovered since.
He did? Who was that?
Yeah. There was one that lady got very, very drunk and her mate.
Is this the one that was the blonde lady with the blue dress?
Yes.
Oh, she was cute. I liked her.
Yes.
Bastard. All right, moving on. I fancied her myself. Except the wife. Don't tell the wife, though. Alan, what have you got for us, mate?
Yeah, I'd like to help everyone have a happier broadband life. So samknows.com. It works for UK or US, but basically SamKnows works with US and UK regulators to try and get a broad idea of broadband performance across the companies. But if you go to their homepage and you click in the UK their join today link, they are partnered with Ofcom, and basically you can sign up for a free white box of theirs, which is a customized TP-Link wireless router that you just plug into your home network, and then basically it goes and keeps an eye, waits until the traffic on your home network is in a slow period, and goes and does constant daily analytics and tests of your broadband performance. And what you get out of it is at the end of the month, you get a email with showing how your broadband upload, download, packet loss, and ping time has been on every day of the month. And also you can dive into their dashboards to get more details. So personally, I think for anyone who cares about their broadband quality, you know, help produce aggregate statistics for your country. And also, you know, you get to actually really know what's going on with your broadband instead of sitting constantly in front of your computer and clicking on speedtest.net or wherever.
Excellent.
And I have a related one that might be of interest for you, Ewan, in BT Towers.
Go on.
Tech Towers. Did you hear about today Virgin Media are launching their Vivid 200 Gamer service?
I'm not in the best terms at the moment with Virgin Media, it has to be said. It's taken me a year to get my broadband fixed with them.
Well, Virgin are relaunching a new gamer addition to their Vivid 200 top package. For an extra £5 a month, they will finally, say, upgrade you to 20 megabit up instead of 10 megabit up. And they also promise not to traffic shape your connection if you're using it a lot. So basically, I mean, I don't understand how they got away with having such shoddy low upload speeds. You know, they just kept boasting about the download speed.
I'm in the throes of conversation about how can you take my money and provide me with shit for the last year. So,
Well, so if yeah. I've always found it, you know, the fact that Virgin only gives 10% of their upload, you know, 10% of their download speed as upload, has always sort of, you know, rankled hard with me.
Say something we'll regret.
Nope, it's fine. So Sam knows. Go get yourself a free white box router. Just plug it into your network, set it and forget, and you'll get an email telling you, so you'll actually know. You know, when did you have good and bad days of your broadband? So maybe you should get one, plug it into your Virgin broadband, and you'll be able to prove how bad they were.
You do have an interest in this conversation, let's just be clear.
Oh, no, well.
Okay,
Sam knows.
You haven't said the name of the company you work for, but they would be in direct competition with Virgin Media.
Sure, but the white box thing is completely impartial, and I was mentioning the Virgin one to help you at BT Towers.
Absolutely.
I didn't know you had any problems with them.
Oh, no, this is at the house.
Okay, that's fine.
It's on a different box, apparently.
I was thinking, you know, for the studio, doubling your upload bandwidth would be well worth £5 a month.
Thank you, mate, most definitely. Camps, what have you got for us?
Mine's a website. It's actually it's relive.cc, and this is a link to almost a bit of a plugin for those of you who use Strava. And I know you're using Strava now, Ewan. So a friend of mine and a number of other colleagues are for Children in Need at the end of September. Over 3 days cycling from Edinburgh to Leeds. He's well into the throes of his training now, and he posted a little link via Twitter to basically show some of the people that have sponsored him how his training's going. And I just thought it would look fantastic. It's almost like a little video clip that's straight out of the back of his training ride, which he's using Strava to measure. And as soon as the scenario is that you essentially register and you connect relive.cc to Strava, what happens then is every time you have finished a ride on the bike, Strava sends the details to Relive, and they generate a little video. And this little video, there's actually a little video clip in the link that I've put on there. It shows the distance, it shows your average speed, it shows the ascent and the descent, and it makes it really visual. It's a lovely looking little video clip off the back of your ride. Shows you the route in a bit of a geographic aerial view. Looks really nice, and it's free.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's kind of cool.
It looks really nice.
I just see watching the video of someone's ride, thinking, "No, I'm not doing that."
Yeah, you wouldn't do that particular ride.
That ride there. the advertising video is like 140k or something.
Yeah, I think it said 39 kilometers at the end, and a lot of hills.
Yeah,
and half of a country. It looked like.
So when Paula put this link out on his training ride, I had to get in touch with him and said, how did you do that? It looks cool. And if you take any pictures on the way, it embeds them in the little video.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still down to sort of 5 to 7 miles a day, really, which it's pretty pathetic in comparison to what most people do for bike rides. But
motivationally, if you're sharing it out, in the health channel, show some of these videos on. We can all see how well you're doing.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'll have a go at that. I've used Strava, and I'm dead impressed with Strava, I have to say. But the one thing that bothers me is that, like, this morning I went out and I had a couple of beers last night with Mark and Muller. So I didn't feel up to a full ride. I had 6 days off the bike because I'd had work and funerals. And I thought, I'll go out and do a little easy run, just do 4 miles. I did 4 miles, and then one of the chaps on Strava that follows me gave me kudos for it. And I'm like, I'm kind of ashamed to accept the kudos, because it's just like, no, just that was me blowing really badly when I came up the back straight from Chester Road. It's not okay. My cool thing is a present off my wife for my birthday. And you're going, okay, well, that's a bit trite, Ewan, but it's the Tax Galaxia rollers. If you've got a yen to go and do some bike riding, and you hit the winter months and you think, oh, okay, I'm not going to get out on the bike, then it's TACX Galaxia. And they're some free-running rollers that are linked via a Dynaband type thing that keeps the front and the rear wheels going. And you stick your bike on it and make sure that you, whatever you do, make sure you get the positioning exactly right so it's over your front axle. Because if it's short of your front axle, I guarantee you're coming off like a fat bloke going through the front door like I did when I tried it in the hallway. You've got to get it exactly right. But if you do, they're actually really easy to ride on. And if you saw the Olympics and you watched the riders, when they'd finished, they were doing a warm down or a warm up, they were on these exact rollers. It's got a little rocking mechanism, which is, I don't think it works, to be honest, it's not perfect. But you put your bike on it and you can cycle your existing road bike freeform. It starts to wobble a little bit, and if you're not careful, it's like a helicopter. You kind of overcorrect backwards and forwards, but it's a really, really good device. I've got a set of rollers that Sharon bought me for my birthday, and I've got them here at the office, so I'm down in the hallway, and I'm just sticking my old mountain bike on it, and that's me for the winter. If there's really bad weather that I don't fancy going out in, I can sit and run away on these things, and they're really, really good. Really impressed with them, but they're tough to ride on. Excuse me. Right, where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Holtzman?
Well, you can be sure and check out my YouTube page. Got lots and lots of computer how-to videos, repair, maintenance, and upgrading PCs. That's at carryholtzman.com.
Excellent, mate. And doing loads and loads of Facebook stuff as well, aren't you still?
Yeah, but the Facebook page is private, so you have to friend me first. But I'll put up what's ever in the news or cool music videos that come out, or boy, they had that one really bizarre perfume commercial that Spike Jones just released. And if you haven't watched it, from a company called Kenzo World, a Japanese perfume maker, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, and I can't stop rewatching it.
Okay, fair enough.
I might have a challenge for you there. You might have to look up the 25th anniversary Nippon Noodles Japanese advert. Has everything
that one's from weird.
Cross-dressing samurai schoolgirl chasing a drone who's nicked her noodles, and it gets weirder from there.
I want to say thank you as well to Brett Ladin, because Brett Ladin is one of the listeners who listened to us for a long period of time, and he has sent me this morning some sake-flavored Kit Kats from Japan.
Yes.
I haven't tried them yet. They're a limited edition, apparently. But we're going to try them over the weekend. Thank you, Brett. If you didn't listen to the Mac Show, I said thank you in the Mac Show. I'm going to say thank you here. It was a very kind gift. And the reason he sent me those was because he sent me some pictures for an iPhone 5C, and I didn't pick them up till about 3 years too late, thanks to my spam folder, so apologies. But I'm going to try those this weekend. Thank you very much, Brett. And thanks to Peach as well, who sent some donations via Patreon. Jeffrey, where can we get a hold of you?
You can find me over at macobserver.com and freshbrewtales.com, And then on the Daily Observations podcast right here, the iOS show, and other places too. Also like Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamet.
Excellent, mate. We did have an email from someone that said, where can I get a hold of the show notes? There are no show notes, but if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, navigate to the relevant day, which is 1st of September for the recording of this show, you'll find all the links of all the stories, and you'll find all the links of all of the cool things and that kind of stuff in there. We don't do show notes per se, though. So. Ian, where are you, mate?
I'm at TIOA BOA, turn it off and back on again. Usually find me in the Slack room when I'm not too busy to respond. I'll be around somewhere there.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Alan, where are you?
Yeah, best place to find me is on Twitter at Digital Amoeba. From there you can find links to other things I do, like this podcast occasionally.
So this Kenzo World thing is a bit kind of like... what do you call it? The one with Christopher Walken.
No, it's nothing like anything I've ever seen before.
No, it is.
What Christopher Walken did was interesting, and what's going on here is something very primal and very raw. It looks freeform and unchoreographed, but clearly it's choreographed.
It's not. This is a piss take on Fatboy Slim and Christopher Walken.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's pretty wild, though.
She shows her ass a couple of times, so that's all right. Chris, where are you, mate?
I'm Camping UK on Twitter, normally here on The Big Show on a Thursday, well, Friday night, now Thursday night, occasionally on The Mac Show, and loitering somewhere in the Slack room.
Excellent, mate, thank you very much. My name's Ewan Rankin, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. I'm going to find out why Line 5 is frozen throughout The Mac Show and throughout The Big Show tonight, and correct it, I do promise. For those of you that complain about production values... Oh, well.
You are justified.
We'll be back again next Thursday. Thanks for listening. Thanks ever so much for listening. We'll see you then.